There was a time not that long ago when taking a picture meant buying film, loading it into the camera, waiting until the roll was finished, and then sending it away to get developed. And it could be days, sometimes weeks, before we saw the photos. Now, it's all instantaneous, and we can immediately see what we took, whether it's good or not, and if we want to keep it. And that's all great, but one thing hasn't changed. We still need to know how to use our cameras in order to take good shots. And we're lucky to have Jack Socha with us today, Larry Mueller here. And Jack is my guest to call on as a resource. He's a photography instructor. He's the author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. Always great to have him with us to share what he knows. And Jack, thank you for joining me today. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for having me back on. Yeah, it's getting to be an exciting time of year. I'm thinking that maybe some folks are giving their kids the digital camera they had at home to take off to college and maybe looking to buy a new one.
So, yeah.
And also, you know, I don't know. I put a couple of articles up on the website, one about a quick guide to close-up photography, because with the weather we've had and the extreme dry, I don't know how long the leaves are going to be on the trees this year.
Oh, yeah.
And so, there's a little article up. There's a short article on maybe focusing on one or two leaves as opposed to trying to get the panoramic view for more drama, but also a guide up there as a PDF file or a web page that you can look at for all the gadgets that you can attach to your various kinds of cameras to get really, really close.
And it really is amazing that some of the attachments. There's actually one for iPhones.
Yeah, you know, this is like the old days of Instamatic cameras. They always keep trying to throw little auxiliary lenses and little things you can snap on there. It is interesting that for the snap shooter, and there always have been people who just want to take a picture. They're not really interested in photography. And these are the folks who used to buy the 126 Instamatics or the 110 cameras years ago. That niche is now being filled by people who have cameras built in their phones.
Yeah, it's amazing. This little lens that you attach to the iPhone, it takes really macro close-ups, and it's also a fisheye. There's another fisheye lens with it, too.
Yeah, it's amazing what they're doing.
For $80.
Yeah, someday I've got to get a camera. Actually, I do have a cell camera that in one of my phones, which I haven't really played around with yet, because the one I've got is only so-called VGA resolution. But I think there's ones that have up to 8 megapixels now, which is not too shabby.
Yeah, pretty good. Tom in Rockland, Wisconsin, has a question about what we're talking about here. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an interest in trying to pick out which kind of camera is really best. There are some that are point and shoot, but they're not just cheap $50 cameras. They're more like $400 or $500, you know, Nikon and Canon and like that. But then also then there's the digital SLR.
And you're really interested in close-up shots?
Well, it'd be some that would be close-up, the animals, birds, and flowers, but then also we've got families, so we'll be taking pictures of live people.
Okay.
Yeah. If you don't mind the size and you don't mind the expense and the learning curve, for that matter, a digital SLR, just as it was in the film days, is still the most versatile of cameras because you can take one lens off and put a different one on. But what I would be doing would be looking at the lenses first to accomplish what you need to have done, because the lens that comes with the camera is normally a mildly wide angle to mildly telephoto, not terribly fast lens, not with a terribly large aperture, and it's just a good, you know, general purpose outdoor picture lens. But if you're going to be shooting wildlife, or the one I always talk about is the indoor shot of the kid scoring the basket, you know, in the gymnasium, the lenses that come with the digital SLRs, generally speaking, are not up to doing that. So you should probably be looking at a lens that really might do something that you really want to have it do, and then find the camera body to go with it. Unless you're shooting pro shots, I think these consumer-level digital Rebels and things like that are quite good, and I would put more money into the lenses than I would be into the body at this time, because you'll keep that lens for years, but the body you might change every couple of years.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
So that would permit me to change the camera itself, but then have and then still keep the lens.
Yeah, have great lenses. Yeah.
Yeah. If you really want to do a number of things, portraits and macro and super telephoto, a camera with a fixed lens is going to have some limitations. Even some of these bridge cameras that are out there, and there are some nice ones. I was just looking at this Steve Digicam site, and they're talking about this General Electronics. It's kind of like the old GE, only they're using the name. They got a Power Pro camera. It's got a 15x zoom. It's called a Power Pro X550. It does not come off. It's fixed on there. It's 16 megapixels, which is pretty respectable these days. Its list price is $149.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to shoot action sports with that, it won't be able to keep up with what you're doing.
One other thing that we really need to do, we're no longer really young, so we need to have a viewfinder, because holding that view, you know, with the screen so far away from us so that we can get our eyes to function on there means that now we can't even see what's on that we're taking a picture of. So the viewfinder is real important.
And you've hit the nail on the head for buying a single-lens reflex camera, because that will give you a much better field of view. You can also hold the camera closer to your body, which is important for stabilizing the lens. Because I tell people, holding those cameras out, you know, a foot and a half away from your face so you can see the screen is kind of like holding a baby with a wet diaper. You know, I mean, it's not comfortable. And especially some of these cameras now have the equivalent of a 400-millimeter telephoto. Well, you have to hold that pretty steady, which means in most cases you have to nestle it against your body to get a little bit of a you know, tripod action sitting there using you as the tripod. So, yeah, for a lot of these things, if you can do it, I would sincerely consider getting a digital SLR. And there's tons of them out there in all different price ranges.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, Tom. Thank you very much for calling. You know, the results, we're seeing the results of some people who have macro lenses up on my Facebook page. At the Larry Mueller Show, I hope you'll go to it. And Jack, if you were at a computer, I'd have you go to it too. Nathan has a photo of a bee that has attacked and I think is killing another insect. It was a very dramatic. But then we have Emery has a real up close shot of an insect, a Canada darner. Took with a Canon 7D and 180-millimeter L-series macro lens. It's an unbelievable shot.
Yeah, your best results really do come from a dedicated macro lens. And they normally come in a 50-millimeter version or a 100-millimeter version. The biggest difference is that if you have the more telephoto version of a macro lens, you can get a little further away from that B and still get a close-up. Which is sometimes a very nice thing to do. But if you're on a budget, or you know, you really are not that into it, you just want to try it out, the first thing to do is just check the macro setting on your camera. Most point-and-shoot cameras, little compact ones, have a little tulip on them, and you press that, and it converts the lens into relatively good close-ups. But there are other inexpensive things you can do as well. You can put what they call a diopter lens in front of your existing lens. And then there are things called extension tubes, which if you have a removable lens, put a spacer in between the lens and the body, which brings it very close. And then also a thing called a bellows. Looks kind of like an accordion that does the same thing but is infinitely adjustable. And I've got pictures of all these on the article.
Yeah, and we posted, we've got that up on my Facebook page, as a matter of fact, so there's a link. So while you're looking at those photos, take a look at Jack's site and article, because it's really interesting.
One of the least expensive things you can do, and this is kind of the hidden secret, there's a thing called a reverse adapter ring. And these things are not expensive at all. They look kind of like a filter, only with no glass in them. And one end will actually fit on the camera body as if it was a lens, and the other end is threaded, so you turn your lens around backwards and screw it on backwards. And so especially if you've got a fixed focus lens like a 50-millimeter, you can focus incredibly close with this very inexpensive adapter.
Hmm.
The only danger with it is that you're exposing the business end of the camera with all the electronics to the elements. So you've got to be a little careful, you know, where you poke the thing. But it's called a reverse adapter ring. And what I suggest is if you have any old film cameras like an old Pentax or something, use that lens with the reverse adapter as opposed to your fancy new one that has all the auto-focusing mechanisms and all those little tiny contacts sitting on the edge of it.
Makes good sense. Jack Socha, our guest today. You can join in with your questions As we talk with him about taking great pictures and using digital cameras, the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. We also have my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post a question there. Or if you've got another close-up, we've got some beautiful close-up photos right now. What about you? If you've got one, let's post it up there on The Larry Mueller Show website. Gary in Harshaw, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi there. Hey, you know, when I was 14 years old, I'm 52 now, first moved up to the Northwoods, the first thing I took out in the woods was my camera. My dad says, what are you doing? You take a gun. So I took a gun and a camera. I really like pictures to take them in. And I have a Canon Rebel T1i, and it does very nice for me and such. And I guess I like the, you know, I do a lot of landscape pictures. I do a lot of driving around and wildlife. But I guess my two favorite types of pictures that sort of is expensive to do in some ways and what I like to do is the macro and the astrology type and such. And, yeah. And when it comes to doing a lot of macro pictures, I guess I have a problem that, you know, when it comes to the subject, you know, do you take the one-thirds or do you actually fill the whole frame with the subject or what, you know? Does macro actually go with that kind of concept or thought pattern?
Okay.
Well, yeah, basically, I mean, composition is composition. Now, I will borrow a term from a guy named Tony Maserati, who's an audio guy. When it comes to music, he says, if it sounds right, it is right. If it looks right to you, it's right. But the nice thing, if you have a dedicated macro lens, it will let you get a lot closer. Generally speaking, they have a larger aperture, so you can shoot at a higher shutter speed, which means you may not have to use a tripod. And then you can move around a little bit and you know, try a vertical composition, try a horizontal composition. But your basic rules of composition are still the same. You know, you may not want to put the bug or the mushroom right in the middle of the picture. You may want to back off and get a little more environment around it and things like that. But that would be up to your own personal taste. However, the use of a dedicated macro lens on the camera you already have, I think, would give you a lot of freedom to do experiment.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Gary, for calling. Appreciate your call. Steve in Wausau, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm not real familiar with my camera, but I took a picture in my rearview mirror going down the street, and it was, you know, like the mirror says, things are closer than they appear. And it was on my monitor. I was looking at it on the camera, and it couldn't see anything, so I started to use the telephoto right on the camera. And all of a sudden, the image came up, and it was perfectly clear. And I took my card into Walgreens, and they said, well, you can't do that here. How else could I do that? Was there a way to do it on a computer or something to get that close-up?
Well, what you should do, do you have a PC or a Mac?
I've got a PC.
Okay. Go to my website, acpress.com.
Okay.
And, you know, once you get past the blurb about the book, at the bottom it says go to the main pages. Go to the photography area, and there's an article I've kept up there for several years now called 5 Free Image Editing Programs. And these are programs mostly for PC that don't cost a dime. And they will let you do the cropping and the enlarging and all those things very, very easily. There's several of them I recommend, and I would download the different ones that are up there and give them a try, because it sounds like that the guys over at the lab probably don't have software on the computer that lets you really, really, really crop down to that final level. So I would just go to my site, acpress.com, go to the main pages, go to the photo area, and read about those 5 free image editing programs. I think one there called Photo Filter would do well, but there's several of them that I think you'd enjoy, and they will let you crop down and crop down and crop down. Keep in mind, when you crop away picture, you're cropping away resolution. So it's possible, let's say if you had a 10-megapixel camera and you cropped away 90% of the picture, what you're left with is 1 megapixel, which may not print that
yeah.
terribly well.
Yeah.
But on the monitor, it showed up very clearly. Will that hold true with when I crop it down or not?
It may show up nicely on the monitor, but it may not show up nicely on the print because the monitors are a little less demanding as far as what the what they have.
Okay.
But you just experiment and give it a try.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Now, those are some great, those editors are and free, too. That's the beauty.
Well, that's it. I mean, I have lots and lots of people now who are buying 16-megapixel point-and-shoot cameras for $80. And there's some nice ones out there. I just got hold of a touchscreen one, which I'm learning to play with. And they're not going to go out and spend $300 for a massive editing program.
Right.
And frankly, over the years, these ones I'm talking about are time-tested. They're fantastic programs. They don't cost a dime. And for the average person to get started, they're a great way to see whether you like doing this kind of thing.
No, absolutely. Peter in Madison, thank you for calling.
Well, thank you for taking the call. We have a gazillion negatives, both color and black and white, going back 50 years. And I want to digitize them all. Some of them are 35 millimeter, some of them are 120, 220. And I wonder if you have a good process for doing that you recommend, preferably using one of those less complex, not necessarily single lens reflex digital.
Well, okay, first take a three-month vacation.
Yeah.
Because it's going to, no matter how you slice it, it's time-consuming.
Yeah, I'm retired.
Well, hey, then you got it. You got it made.
Just retired.
Now, you can do it. You know, the one way of doing it is optically, which is you would put the negative on an opaque piece of paper, and you would light it from behind. In some cases, you would actually tape it to a window or something and re-photograph it with a macro lens. But frankly, you're going to get a lot better results if you pick up a flatbed scanner that has what they call a slide tray where you can put in negatives or whatever. I have a Canon one that I use all the time, and there's various brands out there that they're not terribly expensive anymore, and they will let you mount an entire strip of 120 film or 35 millimeter or slides, and then at a pretty high resolution, it scans all of them, and then you just cut them into pieces and save them. But you want to make sure you get one. If you have a lot of 120, you need to get one that will let you scan 120 as well. And again, these are flatbed scanners. They can also be used for general use for scanning documents and things like that. I think in the long run, you're going to get a lot better results out of that than re-photographing. Although re-photographing, it can be done.
Yeah.
It can be done, but it's going to be time consuming, and the results will vary.
Yeah. So good luck, Peter. Thank you very much for calling. Jack Zosia, our guest today, photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking photography today, taking great shots. I'm zeroing in a little bit on micro shots, but we're talking photography, digital camera photography in general with our guest today, Jack Zosia, author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He's got a great website, and we have a link to it on my Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show, and you'll get a link to his page where we've got the book, but also he has many, many, many articles and things that you can take a look at. A lot of it just free for you to use. So I hope you'll do it. I hope you'll do it.
Cheap, Larry. I'm cheap. But also, I will tell you, folks, that as soon as my wife finishes laying out a book project that she's on, she lays out books professionally, she is going to tackle my website and make it look a little prettier. Because she's the layout person. The information there is good. It is not the most spectacular site, although I have been testing it on things like iPod touches and iPads, and actually the stuff presents itself pretty well on those as well. So if you have an iPad, you can go there, and it's pretty readable. I was kind of pleased about that.
Well, I'm kind of pleased too because we've got more photos, close-up photos on the Facebook page for people to see while they come to. To find your site, there's an orb spider. Kayla took a shot of that. There's a great close-up from Janet of a leaf. Here's an eastern amberwig dragonfly. Emery took a picture of, and we've got a photo of Gretchen. Oh, what is that? I'm not even sure. It's really pretty. Anyway, there's lots of great photos there, so go to my Facebook page and take a look, and while you're there, click on Jack's site as well.
You know, and also, you don't have to take pictures of things that are bugs or birds. You could spend some time in your own kitchen just walking around and looking at little details of cans and jars and salt shakers and coffee cups and all kinds of things. Especially, this is great during the winter when, you know, you think you're not going to do much photography because it's too cold outside. You can have an expedition in your own house. And it's a lot of fun.
Ah, sounds like fun. Jonathan in Dubuque has a question for you. Hi, Jonathan.
Hi, thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I'm getting ready to go on a backpacking trip and trying to learn a little bit about how to use my Rebel so that I can take decent pictures while I'm out there. And one of the things I've noticed about a lot of landscape pictures I've seen is that the sun is a prominent part of the composition. And so I've been trying to figure out how I can take pictures into the sun with getting a nice starburst around the sun. I've been able to get the starburst around the sun by setting my f-stop really high, but when I do that, I kind of lose everything else in the picture. It's all too dark to see anything. So I've seen pictures where you can get a properly exposed foreground and a nice sun with a starburst, but I don't know how to do both at the same time.
Well, this is a problem regardless of whether you're using film or digital. With digital, the dynamic range is not as wide as film used to be. It's actually more like slide film used to be, where it's pretty limited. Now, there are a number of software programs out there that will allow you, if you have a tripod now, to take, let's say, three or four pictures of the same scene, and using your plus-minus exposure control or manual settings, you shoot some that are underexposed, properly exposed, overexposed, or you can use what they call auto-bracketing, which most of your cameras have. And then using the software, it combines the photos together. They call it a high dynamic range picture. So look up HDR software. I have not used it myself, but there's definitely out there. And that's one way where you're able to get both the brightest thing in the world, like the sun, and the dark stuff to all show up. So you might consider that, but you would definitely need a tripod, and your subject would have to be something that is relatively unmoving, like a scenic situation. But they're called HDR software for high dynamic range. That might be your best bet.
There you go. Thanks, Jonathan. Jeff in Stoughton, hi to you.
Yes, how are you this morning? Thank you, Larry, for taking my call.
Sure.
I have an old Canon AE-1 camera, 35mm, with a whole slew of favorite lenses that I've used for years, up until 4 or 5 years ago. And I would like to buy an SLR body that's digital that would accept my FD lenses. If I can't do that and it doesn't make sense, even though I got to manually focus, I understand that. But if I can't do that economically, I might as well go buy a whole damn new SLR camera. Is there any way I can do that reasonably?
I have seen a few aftermarket adapters, but they have some optics built in to correct for the distance between the lens and the sensor. The results are not fantastic. Unfortunately, Canon went up to a different mount after the lenses that you have, the EOS mount that accommodated autofocus, and those film camera lenses will fit on the modern digitals, but you're going to have to end up look around for an FD to EOS adapter and see what the price is. I don't think you're going to be terribly happy with it. Also, not only will you not be able to focus automatically, but you're not going to be able to use any of the programmed exposure. You may be able to use aperture priority, but in many cases you'll be shooting manually as well. Plus, the lens will not stop down at the moment of exposure. You're going to have to do that manually. So you're going to be shooting pretty primitive, if at all. So I hate to say it, but I'm afraid that you may have to buy some new stuff.
Well, there you go, Jeff. Sorry for the bad news. John in Waukesha, what's on your mind?
Hi, Jack. I want to let you know an experiment that I did and the results I got, if you think of it. It deals with the size of the files when you're done taking a picture digitally. And, of course, the higher megapixels, the only downside is the higher, bigger this file size is. And with hard drive space being cheaper, it's not so much an issue. But if you're still sending on the Internet, depending on your upload speed when you're sending photos up, it still is a pretty big issue. So what I did is I took highest setting, in the case I only have a point-and-shoot 7 megapixel, which is now kind of small, but still, a 7 megapixel setting yields like almost 7 megabytes of size, and that could take a little bit of time. And this still applies whether you got a maybe a 15 megapixel now. You still got a big file. And then what I did is found a free program called Fast Stone Resizer, and then you set it to, you know, whatever you want, 800 by 1,000. And I found that as long as you stay about 1,000 and then the other dimension, almost 1,000, you know, it comes out to about 340K, let's say, you know, not even 1 megabyte. And then this is what the beautiful part was. Wait a minute, just put my camera on about that setting. So I did that. I put the camera on like a 1 megapixel setting and took that picture. And then I took the picture at 7 megapixels and resized it to about the same size down. So I have these two pictures now. One was taken, the camera originally at 1, and then the other one was taken higher, but was resized down. And what was weird is I went to Walgreens and printed like an 8x10 of these, and you could even see it on the monitor. There was a huge difference, but you would say, why? So it's all, the lesson is you always want to keep the setting high and then resize it. And maybe you can explain, if you know, the scientific reason why it almost remembers that it used to be a great, you know, higher, more particles in the picture.
Well, that gets down to a lot of complication. Generally speaking, once you get past 5 megapixels or so, if you're printing 8x10s, you know, you're doing pretty good. I mean, you don't need a 20 megapixel image to print an 8x10. The main reason to have the larger megapixels is so that if you crop things, what's left is not too small. And resizing down to something smaller for email, it makes a lot of sense these days. A lot of times, some email programs will not accept the larger size. When I have to send something off for reproduction, I use a service like Dropbox, which is free up to a certain amount of storage, and I put the higher resolution picture on Dropbox and then tell the person to go get it. And this way the quality is maintained. When you resize something, I mean, you are essentially reducing the resolution, and there are different methods of doing it that produce different results, and so you may have hit upon something good. I do have that FastStone Image Viewer as one of the programs on the site that I recommend, so you may want to look into that. But I really can't address, you know, the specific scientific methodology of what you did. I guess the bottom line is if you're happy with the results, then keep using it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Oh, Keith and Edgar, thank you for calling. Hi.
Good morning. I've got two questions, one of which I think you addressed right while I was speaking to your to the person who takes your calls, and it has to do with high dynamic situations.
HDR.
And you mentioned bracketing, and I'm sorry I didn't hear what the answer was. That if you wouldn't mind just re-mentioning.
Oh, sure. We're still in a relatively primitive time with digital cameras. I mean, consumer cameras are only maybe 12 years old. And imagine what cars were like when they were 12 years old. We got a long ways to go. And right now, one of the problems with digital cameras is their dynamic range is not very wide. Film was really the magic fairy dust of photography because it had an incredible range to it. And someday we'll have the same thing digitally. But in the meantime, what the fix is there are software programs that will combine, say, three or more images, assuming they were taken on a tripod with a non-moving subject, and they will combine the ranges. You overexpose some, underexpose the others, et cetera, et cetera. It'll combine the best parts of all three into one that has a broader dynamic range. So look up HDR software and see what you can find.
What is bracketing?
Bracketing is a technique that was used by photographers for years where, for example, if you take a picture and the proper exposure is 125 at f8, you shoot one at f8, open up to 5.6, shoot another one, close down to F11, and shoot another one. So you're going to have three different exposures of the same subject. One of them will come out perfect. But in our case, what we do is we deliberately bracket and then combine the three together. Some of these cameras, especially the SLRs, actually have it buried in the menu someplace where you can assign what they call auto bracketing. So every time you take a picture, it fires the camera three times. Once a little light, once just right, once a little dark.
I see. The second question was, do you have a inexpensive alternative to Photoshop?
Go to my website. and take a look at the article on the five free image editing programs. The most sophisticated one is called the Graphic Image Manipulation Program, or GIMP. That's available for PC, for Mac, and for Linux. And that does have dodging and burning and things like that. But also take a look at the other ones as well, because I use some of these other ones that are a little less less complicated on a daily basis for lots of things that end up being used professionally. So just go take a look at the site, acpress.com, go past the book page, and you'll see, go to other pages, and then click on the photo area, and right at the top is the article, because everybody likes to look at it, on five free image editing programs, and experiment with those. I think you'll be very happy.
All right, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. We had an email from Maura, who says, I'd like to catalog prairie plants and my garden flowers. What's the best way to make a close-up background, etc.? Also, any good ways to print a book document with titles?
Print a book document with titles.
Yeah,
I'm not quite understanding.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, like that sounds more like again, if you go to the website, there's that program called Photo Filter, and it does an excellent job of allowing you to add text to pictures. That may be what you're talking about.
Maybe that's what she's talking about.
Now, yeah. I mean, you can, you know, if you want to do a background, I mean, you can go to a craft store and buy a large piece of cardboard of different colors and just place it right behind the plant. Know, you can also go out buy a photo background for hundreds of dollars, but frankly, if you go to a craft store or a fabric store and you stretch that fabric over some kind of frame, that works extremely well.
Yeah, absolutely. Donna in Hartford has a question. Hi, Donna.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a couple of questions. First of all, I guess disenchanted with all of the digital age, and I'm only 46. But this, you know, not being able to touch your pictures much anymore and having to put everything around on a screen, and then when you do finally print them out, someone, you know, like Walgreens or out, the color is often not anything near what you see on your digital screen. So my first question is, do you see that improving? And my second question is, my uncle was a master photographer a number of years back, and I'm just wondering what the major professionals out there, whether it be portrait or nature or whatever kind of photography that they're into, what are they using? Are they all into digital? Is film completely defunct? Will it ever come back? I guess I just can't let go of film.
Okay.
I don't blame you. I must tell you that most photographers, with the exception of certain fine art photographers, are using digital. And you'll see stuff that you swear was shot with film. Now, if you pick up the current issue of Popular Photography, which is the September issue, the headline on the front page of the cover is Film Lives, How Analog Still Shines in the Digital Era. So you may take a look at that and get a little bit of heart from that. As far as the color of the pictures that you're getting not looking the same as on your camera, there should be some data going between the two of them. If you are discovering that it is only with one camera where it's happening, it may be the camera. If it's happening with all of the cameras that you have, are you doing any processing on your monitor before you give it to the photo lab, and have you calibrated your monitor? Because that may be where the real problem is what you're seeing on the monitor does not match what's going on at the lab. There are some little gadgets you can buy that are called spiders that you stick on the screen that can help calibrate that. But this is just like the days of printing color film. Temperatures and light bulbs and all kinds of things had to be all completely calibrated so that what you see is what you get. What you might try doing is going back to your lab with the pictures that are not quite the right color and seeing if they can adjust them for you. And if you find a lab that does a good job, keep on using them.
Yeah.
If I may, is it better to put something like on a jump drive and or flash drive and take it in? Or because I've been told that it's probably the best idea to send it back to my computer.
It doesn't matter. Digital is digital. The main thing is that
learning how to calibrate. Okay.
Yeah. It try a different camera and see if you get different results. I'd be curious about
that. I finally invested in my first really good camera, I thought. It's a nice Sony with a Carl Zeiss lens on it. Paid $400 for the thing. I love it. It's fun to use. Of course, it's digital, and now it's even more fun to use. It's going to take hundreds and hundreds of photos. but basically they're all just on a, you know, a disc because music and other.
Oh, you're breaking up. I'm sorry. I wish we could keep on there with you, Donna, but I think we got the gist.
Yeah, there is a difference between labs. There are two stores within a few blocks of each other of the same company, and they have two different types of digital printers, and one does a better job than the other. So, I mean, it just – and also there are things that go on. They're supposed to maintain these correctly and calibrate them and put in fresh chemistry. And, you know, if you may discover at the end of the day you don't get as good a quality as the beginning of the day because they haven't refreshed the chemistry. This is supposed to be fixed and all working nicely. So I guess shop around for your lab. And if you find one that is giving you better results, stick with them.
Bob, also, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, I just say, you know, most people are not printing at home anymore unless they're really big enthusiasts. So labs are out there, and they're doing a really good job.
Bob in Wauwatosa, hello.
Good morning.
Morning.
I've got a question regarding an article that one of your guests' proteges, a fellow named Don Lindich, had in the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel June 3rd of this year about the new Olympus OMDEM5 camera.
Okay.
He raves about the camera, but there's something in the article that puzzles me a little bit. He makes reference to the Olympus Micro Four Thirds cameras, and evidently this camera is still in that family or related somehow. And he talks about how these cameras, I'm quoting, produce amazing JPG, which is JPEG, pictures right from the camera with no tweaking necessary. I don't understand what he's talking about there. My recollection from computer class is that TIFF files are bitmapped and JPEGs are vector-based. Am I right?
Well, no. The difference between the two is that the JPEGs are compressible to save space and TIFFs are not. And a lot of photographers, most cameras shoot JPEGs unless you're shooting a very professional camera that's shooting what they call RAW or in TIFF in some cases. But basically what he's saying is that the quality of the JPEG coming out of that particular camera, in his opinion, does not need a lot of color correction and tweaking to make it look better. And so he just happens to like the way they look. Each digital camera has built-in algorithms that each company jealously guards that produces the kind of picture they think looks really good. And he just happens to think that the Olympus color and saturation and so on, so that's in that particular camera is so good he doesn't have to deal with it afterwards, where maybe somebody else might get it and say, oh, this is oversaturated. They may change it on their computer. Hmm. So he's just saying he likes the way the pictures look that come out of the camera.
Bob, thank you very much for calling. And Jack, thank you so much. I hope, go to my Facebook page, Jack, when you're done here.
I'll take a look at those bugs,
Because there are a bunch of close-up. We've added several more people have sent in close-up photos. They're just beautiful. And I really appreciate having you with us, Jack, today.
Well, I hope to be on again, and enjoy your close-up photography.
And your website again?
acpress.com.
acpress.com. And we have a link to that on my Facebook page. Thanks, Jack.
Thank you.
Appreciate it very much. Jack Socha, photography instructor and author of How to Use the Digital Camera You Just Bought. He does a great job, doesn't he? And I really enjoy his website. He's got so much good information on there. And nice to know and great to talk about how to take great digital photos. We're going to stay on a tech topic when we talk next with computer specialist Joe Rhodes about Mac computers and other devices. There's always something interesting going on in the world of Apple. And Joe's a great guide to have. So stay tuned right here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.